Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
You lend somebody $100. A couple of years later, they say, hey, times are tough, man. I'm only going to pay you back $50. Take it or leave it. And you say, what are you, Greece? There's a debt deal, maybe, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 20th of January. Glad you could be with us. With the caveat that there is still a lot of talking to go over in Athens, it does look like the Greek government has maybe, kinda, sorta reached a deal with the banks that it owes something like $400 billion to. That's where we're going to start our weekly wrap this Friday. John Carney's here from CNBC, Felix Salmon from Reuters as well. Hey, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Kai.
All right, Felix. So let's say you are a Greek creditor. You're facing a haircut, a discount on your debt of 50%, maybe 70%, the reports are. Do you take the deal?
I don't think you have any choice. I think actually, literally, you don't have any choice. Greece is almost certainly going to change the law so that you have to accept the deal, more or less, whether you like it or not.
Can they do that?
They can, because all of the bonds are issued under Greek law, and the Greek government controls Greek law. It's quite clever.
John, what happens if this is another head fake and it turns out there isn't really a deal and the apocalypse yet might come?
So Greece has, on March 20th, a tremendous amount of debt that's coming due. They do not have the money to pay it off. This would be a gigantic default that would put several European banks in trouble, and we would have an enormous international financial calamity.
Oh, and other things to send you into your weekend. All right, so hold on a minute.
I don't think it would be that bad, to be honest.
Well, let's back up for a second here. So let me make sure I have it right. If this agreement is reached and there is a 50% or 70% haircut, Felix, then it's not technically a default.
Well, it is a default. There's no two ways about it. If you don't pay back $14 billion when it's due, that's a default. The only question is, will you replace that amount that you're owed with something else and keep on paying that, or will you just owe that $14 billion and have the paper be in default? The question is whether you're going to have outstanding paper which is defaulted paper or not. Greece is going to default on March the 20th either way.
You heard it here first, folks. All right, so John, and this is the make me care question. We have been over here so whipsawed by this thing, right? It was Greece and then Italy and now France with a downgrade. And remind us why we care.
Well, one, because Europe is a huge economic partner, a trading partner with the U.S. If you look at what just happened to Google, Google's earnings were disappointing. Why? Because their growth in Europe stalled out. Many of the companies that we think of as all-American companies have a lot of exposure to all of Europe. And so if Europe melts down, it hurts us very badly.
Well, color me cynical, John, but the stock market's been up 4 days in a row. I mean, come on, how bad can it be?
And frankly, Greece isn't Europe. Greece is a tiny economy about the size
But Felix, hold on, because the thing that we've been told from day one on this story is if Greece goes, then Europe is torn asunder and the euro is done and it's the apocalypse.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I guess I'm a little bit more apocalyptic. I think even if they get this deal done and they get a 50% haircut on what is really only 50% of their debt, so we're talking more like a 25 to 30% debt reduction, I think Greece still can't afford that much debt. It will still have 200 billion euros outstanding and paying 4% on that. It actually can't afford even the deal it's trying to get right now.
All right. Let's back it up for a minute and talk about the rest of Europe, Germany and France and what's happening there. I mean, Felix, is Angela Merkel looking at this and going, all right, this is the way it has to be?
Again, I don't think she has any choice. As John says, Greece has way too much debt, even in the best case scenario. So she has to deal with realities as they are on the ground. And the reality is that Greece is going to default on March 20th.
You keep saying that. How do you know?
Because it doesn't have the money to pay.
But so what I think Felix is getting at is that they will not pay them. They will not be able to pay off their debt with actual money, which is what they promised people. So what they'll have to do is either not pay or pay with more debt. Say, oh, thank you very much. Here's
we owe you 100 euros in debt. Here's 35 euros in bonds and 15 euros in cash, and you'd better make do with that.
And that's the way this deal is going to shake out, something like that. All right.
That's what it's looking like right now.
Felix Hammond from Reuters, John Carney from CNBC live with us from New York City. Thanks, guys. Have yourselves a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
We'll see you. On Wall Street today, the Dow did fine. The other two, less so. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Couple of quick updates now on the internet piracy story that's been bubbling all week. First of all, it looks like the web blackout on Wednesday worked. Wikipedia, you might remember, and a whole bunch of others turned themselves basically off to protest SOPA and PIPA, the two piracy bills pending in Congress. Except they're not pending anymore. Today, leaders in both the House and the Senate put them on hold. Indefinitely, I should add. Also, there were more police raids related to the MegaUpload.com shutdown today, the service that lets you share big files like high-quality videos for nothing. The Justice Department, as I mentioned, shut them down yesterday. And we saw a tweet about it this morning that struck us. It's from singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton, and here's what he said. Any other musicians out there notice that ever since they shut down MegaUpload, the money has just been pouring in? We thought that was kind of clever, so we called him up to talk about it. Jonathan, good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
So obviously you're being sarcastic with that tweet, but are you as a musician able to make money with all the piracy out there?
I am. I've been happily coexisting with piracy for the last 6 years. I make a better living as a musician than I did when I was writing software.
Really?
Yes.
But isn't it just wrong to do what, you know, Mega Upload has been letting people do?
Yeah, there's not. I don't have any question in my mind that what they were doing was illegal and probably immoral. But what I was getting at with that tweet is, does the activity on that site really affect my bottom line very much, or indeed the bottom line of any content creator? If groups like the MPAA spent more time creating a platform where people could buy their stuff legally and easily instead of trying to block all this piracy, I think they'd get better results.
Well, you know, the Motion Picture Association, as you said, the MPAA, and a whole bunch of other people are in theory, working on that. But what about you as an artist? Do you ever put your stuff up there and just see what happens with it?
Yeah, I do that all the time. In fact, when I first started, I wrote a song a week for a year, and I put them all up for free. And, you know, under the theory that piracy was, in fact, good for an artist, and really what you want is exposure more than anything else. It seems to have worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah. I wonder if you do what a lot of people do. You know, you'll try to pay for something either on Netflix or iTunes, and then if it's not there, you'll go get it from Mega Upload or any one of the other zillion sites that are out there?
Exactly. And, you know, when you try to attach a value to the damage caused by the activity on a site like Mega Upload, I think it's important to remember that not every download is the same thing as a lost sale. And frequently, people are downloading things because there is no legal way for them to acquire it.
How old are you?
I'm 41.
Oh, so you're not, I mean, this is going to sound terrible. You're not a young guy. You're not some 22-year-old college kid doing this.
No, I'm an old person, and I know how to use the internet.
What do you make of the argument offered by some, usually on the younger side of the demographic spectrum, that you know, information wants to be free and we're entitled to have this stuff?
There's no rule that says a creative person is entitled to be paid for their creative work. In fact, for most of human history, music and art was not something that people got paid for at all.
Yeah, all right. So this is where the cards and letters are going to come on this segment, because there is this whole copyright law thing and protection of intellectual property.
Well, don't get me wrong. I believe in copyright, and I make no secret of the fact that I would love to be paid for music. I'm very grateful that that is my job. But all of the time, we, through our actions as individuals, demonstrate what we value as a society. And I think we've all made it pretty clear that our opinions about copyright have really shifted. And I just don't think the laws have caught up to that yet.
Jonathan Colton, he's a singer-songwriter in New York City. If you listen to his stuff, buy it, will you? Pay him for it. Jonathan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
There are a couple of big football games coming up this weekend. The Giants are going to be in San Francisco to take on the 49ers. Baltimore goes to New England to take on the Patriots, and the winners go to the Super Bowl. We, though, are going to talk about the losers. The St. Louis Rams had a truly awful 2-14 season this year, which makes them the perfect pick for a big splashy marketing deal with international economic implications, right? The guy who owns the Rams, Stan Kroenke, also owns the British soccer club Arsenal, which plays at Wembley Stadium. Today we learned that the Rams have signed on to be the home team at Wembley for good old American football. For the next 3 years, they will play one of their 16 regular season NFL games in London. But do you suppose there's really a market for the London Rams? We asked Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman to find out.
There is one guy in the world who's the reason I know anything at all about football, because he was the quarterback in our daily pickup games after school in sixth grade. Jeffrey Kittredge now lives in London, where he's a corporate lawyer. And it turns out he's already been to one of these NFL games at Wembley back in 2009, Tampa Bay against New England. He says he'll definitely try to see the Rams next time. But he also thinks the NFL will have a tough time getting Brits interested. They're used to fast-paced soccer games.
Football has much more standing around, huddling, and the English fans quickly start scanning around with their binoculars along the sidelines to look at the cheerleaders, the coaching.
Now keep in mind, England's got a few hundred thousand Americans who can help fill a stadium once a year, no problem. But Patrick Risch, a sports economist at Webster University in St. Louis, says attracting more British fans or even trying to put an NFL team in England permanently will be harder. For one thing, football doesn't have an easy way to reach Europeans on TV because it's not an Olympic sport. Plus,
one of the things that the other team sports, hockey, baseball, basketball, have is tons of international guys competing in professional leagues here in the States. So I think that if you don't have that, it's harder to sell.
Risch says another game's being played here, too. The Rams are looking for a new stadium. Playing one home game in London could be a way to put pressure on city officials in St. Louis. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Citizens United, as it's known, made unlimited corporate and union political contributions legal. And that, in turn, paved the way for a whole new breed of political action committee. They're called super PACs. We've been talking about them all week. And they can raise and spend as much as they want on almost anything they want. Which, when you think about it, would be a nice thing to have. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer came up with a personal super PAC how-to.
I was treasurer of my eighth grade class. I told my classmates I wanted to be treasurer because I liked money. I won in a landslide. So what if I want to seek higher office again and get a super PAC to support me? Hey, everybody's got a political action committee at their back. President Obama, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, even comedian Stephen Colbert. I'll look to him for inspiration and guidance.
We did it!
Okay, I'm fired up. So I head over to Trevor Potter's office. He's Colbert's campaign finance lawyer and a former chairman of the Federal Election Commission, or FEC. He helped Colbert set up a super PAC.
This is not rocket science. For most people, you want to have a super PAC, fine. You file a one-page letter.
That letter goes to the FEC. It says you'll raise money in unlimited amounts. And presto, you have a registered super PAC. Super PACs do have to report who gave them those unlimited donations. That is one drawback. But I can get around that by following Colbert again. He had Trevor Potter set up another group called a 501c4. These are interest groups, like AARP. They can run political ads, but politics can't be their primary purpose. And here's the key thing. A 501c4 doesn't have to disclose its donors.
So without this, I am transparent. Without it, here's who gave me my money. With it, you know what? Your mother gave me my money. Well, I like that, Trev.
I like that, too. because now I can take that anonymous money from the C4 and transfer it to a super PAC, which can spend the money promoting a candidate.
So I can take secret donations of my C4 and give it to my supposedly transparent super PAC.
And it'll say, given by your C4.
What is the difference between that and money laundering?
It's hard to say.
Now, if you're a candidate, you can't have your own super PAC or 501c4. And super PACs aren't supposed to coordinate their actions with candidates. But you can put a former campaign staffer or business partner in charge. When Colbert recently decided to explore a presidential run, he turned control of his super PAC over to Jon Stewart.
Colbert's super PAC is dead.
But it has been reborn as... the definitely not coordinating with Stephen Colbert super PAC!
Okay, so I'll have my boss run my PAC. I'll have a 501c4 that'll pump anonymous money into my super PAC, and there's just one problem. I'm kidding about my candidacy. But I did teach you a few things about campaign finance, right? That's what Colbert is trying to do. Campaign finance reformers are delighted. Gabriella Schneider is spokeswoman for the Sunlight Foundation.
There's more questions being asked. There's going to be more engagement. And we can all agree that the system is broken and we need it to change.
But here's the thing. Colbert is running a mock campaign. Meanwhile, super PACs for real candidates are really doing all of this. It's no joke. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Coming up, here's what happens when you ask around about the economy in China.
He's poor and uneducated. He has no access to a computer, much less the internet. As he's telling me this, the swelling crowd of people watch us and start chiming in. So many people that the police finally are called in.
But first, let's do the numbers. It was an up-and-down day, but an up week. The Dow Industrials lifted 96 points, about 0.75%, closed at 12,720. The NASDAQ was off 1 point, essentially flat, ended things at 2786. The S&P 500 also flat at the bell, 1315 was the number. For the week, though, it was all up, baby. The Dow put on 2.4%. The NASDAQ advanced 2.8%. The S&P 500 took home 2%. Tech stocks worth both ends of the equation today. Blue chips like IBM, Intel, and Microsoft boosted the Dow. Big Blue pushed ahead more than 4% after a strong earnings report. Microsoft also delivered good earnings news. Shares were up more than 5.5%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.02%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. The Energy Information Administration issues its updated forecasts for energy, supply, demand, and prices in the U.S. Everybody rest up this weekend. The next debate between Republican candidates takes place in Tampa, Florida. And here's something to celebrate. January 23rd is National Pie Day. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Earlier this week, we sent Nancy Marshall-Genzer out to one of the last places in the country where the Occupy movement is still actually occupying anything. It's Washington, D.C. And one of the things they're talking about there is money, whether taking donations inevitably leads to capitalist corruption. Money is the root of all evil, one of the protesters said. But Patrick Price wrote from Atlanta with a correction.
I was struck by what one of the protesters stated about the old adage, money is the root of all evil. That is false. The old adage is, the love of money is the root of all evil. When taken in this new correct light, receiving monetary donations to support Occupy Wall Street is not hypocritical. It's just a realization that food and shelter is not all you need in today's world.
We did manufacturing on Tuesday. Sarah Alvarez took a trip back in industrial time with the late Mr. Rogers.
I'd like to show you some people making crayons. Let's come along. I have a film of it here.
Lisa Hamilton, now an Episcopal priest from Venice, Florida, had this to say.
I had the privilege and the fun of working in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood between 1986 and 1991. And one of the first things I learned was the difference between how people make something and how things are made. Fred was devoted to helping small children understand the import of people and our capacity to create. I was fortunate indeed to work for a man as wise as Fred Rogers.
Send us your thoughts. Email works best. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on the link that says contact. Next Monday is a big day on the Chinese calendar. It's Chinese New Year, the year of the dragon to be precise, widely considered an auspicious sign to be born under. Whether you believe that or not, 2012 is definitely not going to be a boring year in China. Economic growth is slowing. Inflation is still high. The real estate bubble is still a bubble. And to top it all off, for the first time in a decade, there's going to be a leadership change in Beijing. All over China this week, people have been traveling, tens of millions of migrant workers going home for the holidays. So we sent our man in Shanghai, Rob Schmitz, out to the train station in Shanghai to talk to some of them. And he's with us now. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Guy.
So you went out and you talked to people literally from all over the country, because that's the way it goes this time of year over there. What are they saying? What are they talking about?
Well, I'm going to start this out by playing some tape. So I get to the train ticket line, lots of people, of course. I pull out my microphone. Everyone mm-hmm. sees I'm a journalist, and you've been in this situation. It's sort of like bringing out a gun. So I break the ice. I ask one guy how long he's been waiting in line, and everyone responds.
Lots of screaming, lots of talking. What are they saying? What are they mad about? Because clearly they're mad, right?
They are. They're mad because it's becoming more difficult to buy tickets. This year, the government thought it would make buying train tickets easier by making tickets available online. Hmm. A bad idea.
How come?
Because there are hundreds of millions of people in China like these guys who live on less than a few dollars a day. They just don't have the means or the know-how to hop online and buy tickets. Here's some tape from one man I spoke to about this, Zhang Weisheng. So Zhang's simply saying, it's not fair. He's poor and uneducated. He has no access to a computer, much less the internet. As he's telling me this, the swelling crowd of people watch us and start chiming in. So many people that the police finally are called in.
Which is not the way things usually happen in China, right? It's against the social harmony.
No, it's against the social harmony. And finally, the cops finally left. But what's clear is that it's a bigger issue than just train tickets. This is a reminder that the wealth gap is widening in China. And this train ticket fiasco really hits a chord, because train travel has always been within the means of many working migrants in China. And now you've got these luxurious bullet trains, online ticketing. It's becoming a system that favors the rich.
Give me the context, though, Rob, because we learned earlier mm-hmm. this week Chinese GDP growth is slowing. The economy is slowing down. Not a lot, but it's slowing. So what does that do for this wealth gap and the inequality?
Well, any year of an economic slowdown in China is not a good year. But this year especially, it's a political transition year in Beijing. At the end of this year, President Hu Jintao will step down, making way for a new president. I asked a bunch of people in line what they hope the new leaders will do for China. Pretty much everyone I spoke to gave me the same answer. Here's a little tape from Cao Xiaobin. He's a construction worker from Western China.
What's he saying?
Well, Tao's saying that the price of food is going up at a rate of 6 or 7%, while his salary only went up 3% last year. He says if this keeps up, he's not going to be able to survive on what he makes. He thinks the new leadership will need to focus on bringing more people into the middle class. The last thing he told me was really interesting. He said, being poor in China is becoming more difficult. And I think that pretty much sums it up.
What, if anything, is the government saying about this? I mean, they have been trying for decades now to get more people into the middle class.
Yeah, and they're going to have to do it, or else they might be out of the jobs themselves. One thing the government's done recently is it raised the poverty line. So what that did was it automatically gave welfare benefits to 100 million people. So that was a good move. And, the government's trying to make it easier for people to consume more. It's trying to raise wages with the idea that those in the middle class will buy more, so that this will create more jobs. But that's really difficult to do in an economy that's slowing down like China. So the year of the dragon might be a very interesting year.
Rob Schmitz in Shanghai for us. Rob, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Guy.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out, a chance to get away from the news of the day and catch up on the things that didn't quite make the headlines, comes to us the same way it always does, from Rico Galliano, Brendan Francis Newnham, and the rest of the Marketplace staff.
George Judson, managing editor, what story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, there's a new religion. It's called the Church of Copimism.
All right.
It's in Sweden. It's been recognized, and they worship file sharing.
Like music file sharing?
Music, movies. The head of the church says, we don't believe that copying is stealing.
And this is a religion that's been recognized by the government of Sweden?
It's been recognized by the government. The two shortcuts for copy and paste are the church's sacred symbols.
Stacey Vanek-Smith, senior reporter, Marketplace. What's your story?
Well, Brendan, it is a wine crime.
Red wine with fish?
No, worse. actually, fake Pinot Noir. Gallo Mondavi, the big winery, just had to settle a class action suit for $2 million because apparently for years it's been selling wine as Pinot Noir when it in fact was not.
And were they aware of that?
No, actually. Apparently this French wine distribution company has been selling grapes to the Gallo Mondavi company for years, saying that they were Pinot Noir when actually they weren't.
So, all right, that sounds like a legitimate wine crime. Except there are no hard-boiled detectives, there are no femme fatales, so is it really a Pinot Noir?
Oh.
John Haas, editor, what story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Earlier this week, a British Airways flight, the passengers started freaking out when they heard an announcement saying the plane was about to crash into the ocean.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah, but fortunately, the pilot quickly came on and reassured passengers that it was not about to crash. He had accidentally hit a wrong button.
That launched the emergency recording?
Yes. The airline did issue an apology for what they called undue concern.
Well, that's a start, but maybe they could also pay for the dry cleaning bills on everyone's pants, don't you think?
There's plenty more where that came from. The radio show that Brendan and Rico do is called The Dinner Party. There's a link to their podcast on our website. It's called marketplace.org. And that's that. That's Marketplace from APM American Public Media on this Friday. Today, the Dow gained 96 points, 0.75%. The NASDAQ off less than a point, basically flat. The S&P 500 also down less than a point, flat there as well. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's acting producer is Megan Larson. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. JJ Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, lessons from the television show Shark Tank.
I'm deciding already whether I have any interest in investing in that business or not because I'm watching that individual and seeing how good they are under pressure.
It's not actual sharks, by the way. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend. This is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.